This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning and good morning, listeners.
Now, Sophie, you have got yourself already in just, is it under a year now at Shingleback Farm, a very productive garden. I saw in your latest newsletter baskets of cucumbers and tomatoes and delicious things to eat. And there's nothing better than having a productive garden, is there?
Well, I'm totally biased. I think it's the only way you have access to nutrient-dense food. And, you know, if you're not so much into the philosophy of nutrient-dense food, if you're just into flavour, you've got to grow your own.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And we're going to talk in just a moment to Jamie McElwain, Master Landscaper and organiser of the Second Harvest Garden Festival. If you'd like to celebrate your own harvest, please let us know. I had a beautiful picture sent through of some great-looking zucchinis. And the texter says, first time I ever grew zucchinis. So you are enjoying that, which is absolutely wonderful. Thank you very much for that. Later in the program, I've got a couple of ABC gardening magazines to give away, one by phone, one by text. But call now if you've got a productive garden question for Sophie and Jamie, 1300 222 891, and your comments are always welcome on the text line, which is 0467 922 891. We might just get the conversation going about veggies with Clint in Cumberland Park, who is on the line. Welcome, Clint.
Hi, good morning. And I was riding around Morphettville Racecourse yesterday, and there are extra amount of horse manure bags that are left out there for free. So go and get yourself some. Price is Right. And you never know, you might grow some veggies via a champion racehorse.
There you go.
Keep in mind, they can be a bit leaky and a bit heavy. So
yeah, absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously, you know, there'll be some people thinking, oh, but what about, you know, worming treatments in horses? Well, there is a move to reduce the amount of worming treatments put in things and to increase the number of dung beetles that are processing stuff into the soil. So lots of organic gardeners still use horse manure, and by the time it gets broken down in the soil, it's safe to use.
Nice one. Hey, speaking of gravel, I have indoor pots with gravel down the bottom, so I don't have a really trouble with it going anywhere, but I have a pet mice and I open my cage and lean it up against the pots, and they go out for a run and start digging around, and one day they decided to dig right down and grab the gravel and bring it back to the headquarters, to their main cage, the mouse mansion.
Really? Oh my gosh.
In the corner. They thought it was valuable for some reason. Maybe they're going to make a great pyramid or something. I don't know.
See, I'm dealing with mice too, but they're not pets.
Well, speaking of, I'm ringing up because my veggies and some of my herbs have a problem with some lovely pests. They have like a scorched earth policy out there, and they just annihilate everything I try to grow. So in a sort of a ranking system, given the Olympics on, I'm calling the pest problem bronze for possum, silver for starlings and maybe Indian miners. I don't know which is which. And gold for rats.
Oh,
what sort of strategies can I use?
Okay, exclusion is your best, right? And, you know, whether it is really tricky. So whether you can actually make some wire, like chicken wire, small chicken wire frames. And, you know, I've repurposed over the years frames from all sorts of things, like the old dog hammocks, you know, those metal beds that you put a dog in, you put a hessian sack over. Well, sometimes you end up with those old frames, and then you can put chicken wire over and you sit it down over your bed. Often, just excluding those pests can make all the difference. There's all sorts of other tricks people have about how you deter things like possums. I mean, I do know a gardener who simply put a wind chime there and they didn't like the sound of it near where it was hanging. You know, it's about working out how you can share, I guess, but exclusion is the way to go, Clint. And one of the things that I have been struggling with this year is sowing seeds of pumpkins. More or less, I have to do it inside, because if I do it into, you know, growing pots in my walled veggie garden, the mice eat them. So I think I've had about 5 sowings because of mice. And in the end, I have made a mouse-proof frame that goes over the top of these things, and I use wire insect exclusion netting, just like people have been talking about, and so far so good.
Yeah, nice one. I've tried a few of these things and have the same sort of problems as well. So, yeah. My brother hates wind chimes, so I sent him one for his birthday. He never thinks.
Nice work, Clint. Well, look, good luck with trying some of those techniques, and thank you very much for calling in.
Okay.
Thanks, Clint. The phone line is 1-300-222-891. But next weekend is Valentine's Day on Saturday, the 14th of February. And if you love your garden, and particularly you love organic produce in your garden, or if you would like to find out how to become a gardener that produces wonderful organic produce, then you are invited to attend the Second Harvest Garden Festival. There are 14 gardens on display. They're real productive gardens in real backyards. The people that grow them will be there. You can learn practical climate-suited techniques from them. You can discover new ideas for raised beds, for soil health, for garden design, and you can support a local food charity simply by spending a day or two doing what you love. And the man behind the second ever Harvest Garden Festival is in the studio right now, Jamie McIlwain, master landscaper, friend of Talkback Gardening. Welcome back to the studio.
Good morning, Deb. Thanks for having us. And hello, Sophie, and all the garden lovers listening in today.
Morning.
Now, it's just lovely to have you back. You must be pretty stressed because you've got 14 gardeners. Now, for people that haven't heard about the Harvest Garden Festival, maybe didn't go along last year, what is the whole aim of the event?
Look, very simply, Deb, this is a weekend where people who may want to get into vegetable gardening or productive gardening and learn more. And it's also for people who have been doing it for a year or 10 years or decades to come along and see how a multitude of different people are growing things in different ways. So it's there's a little bit for everyone to look at and to see and understand what might suit you and how you may even improve things in what you're doing at home.
And you can be a great gardener and still learn, can't you? Because you have shown all the 14 gardeners involved every single gardener that's on display.
Yes, we did a preview on, where are we today, Thursday. And even for me, just going out there, like I get so inspired by ingenious ways people are doing different things from, you know, even, you know, in a chook run, what you can grow in a chook run to protect it so the chickens aren't pecking at it all the time. So, you know, they're growing through these little frames and the chooks have green things to eat all the time. It's just little things like that, different structures and whether they're permanent and temporary to protect from sun or from pests and birds and possums and things. So
that's brilliant. And, you know, you can learn something new every single day, doesn't matter how long you've been gardening. And the thing is, you can look at YouTube stuff, you can go online, blah, 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 but talking to somebody is the best way to share that information, isn't it?
100%. This is extremely tangible. Like I said, you can see it and touch it. You can talk to people about what they've created, different irrigation systems. We've had a few calls this morning about what soils to use, and that's extremely important. What beds suit you? What do you want to grow? And be in control of. So there's lots of demonstrations, which we'll talk about and talks over the weekend too, which we can get into a little later on.
Yes. Well, look, Sophie, if you haven't actually helped design some of these gardens, I'm sure you've visited all of them. So I'm going to throw over for you and Jamie to have a chat about the wonderful gardens you can see in next weekend's Harvest Garden Festival.
Well, I think, you know, there's 14 gardens and I have actually visited 9 of them. And the thing I think that's really important is there's all different styles, from sort of very relatable, you know, backyard gardens to gardens that are seriously into full-scale production. And so whatever scale you want to go to, and there's different ways. You could either go to all of them, Jamie, which I'm sure lots of people will, or you could work out which ones are close to you and go to sort of some of the ones that are either you're more interested in or others. And the website is fantastic, I must say, too. Lots of photos to give you a feel of all these gardens.
Yes, yeah, so if people do want to go to the Open Gardens website, there's a very clear link to the Harvest Garden Festival. And as you said, Sophie, plenty of photos. And I've tried to do a really descriptive, some descriptive notes about all of the gardens individually, just so people can grasp something about what they might want to look into more. And also on the bottom of those, each individual page for each garden, a lot of them are doing, talks and demonstrations, and there's a lot of, food and things are also being offered on over the weekend too.
Fantastic. And, everyone will learn something at every garden, So obviously some mightn't be your style, but you, like you said, I'm wanting to know which garden has that chook run to know which one to visit. So sounds amazing.
Yeah. Well, speaking of chooks, I think we've got hundreds of chooks actually over all the gardens. In fact, more than that, we've got there's even two kangaroo sanctuaries, yes. Donkeys and sheep and ducks and you name it. It's going to be great fun for the kids to come along as well. Under 18s are free, and yeah, there's going to be a whole lot of things for different people to explore.
How wonderful. And I do know for those 14 gardeners, I actually saw one yesterday and, who was in – whenever you agree to open your garden, you have this rush of blood to the head and then you get all excited and then you go through this panic and but you come out at the end of it and people get so inspired by all the different things that they see in your garden and other gardens that it's a really rewarding experience.
Yes, I think that was Tanya, I think, who was joined you yes. At your place, and she had a lovely day yesterday. I was speaking to her last night, and she's got an amazing place at Mount Pleasant where she has she mentors guests through NDIS, and it's a sensory farm. So she's going to move all her lovely donkeys and alpacas and sheep into a paddock next to her amazing permaculture food forest that she's just putting the final touches on now. And yep. That'll be a wonderful experience out there. I think her mum and daughter are making chocolate muffins and scones, and it's going to be a really fun day for them out there.
Fabulous. So, there's certainly lots to see. Now, you don't you've got more cost-effective ways of seeing these gardens, right? You could just go and see one, or you could see a number, couldn't you?
Yeah, so if people just want to go and see one garden, it's $10 to just get a single entry just to go into one garden. There's a $25 four-garden pass, and which enables you to see, obviously, four gardens, and there's a $50 all-garden pass, which you can go, all weekend and go to all the gardens. And we'll just reiterate that by saying that all proceeds of this event are going to a wonderful sort of second-tier South Australian charity called Food on the Table. So you're going to have a great educational and fun weekend and doing good things as well, supplying this amazing organisation with some funds.
And an incredible price too, because you can see all 14 gardens for $50. That's full days of entertainment across the whole weekend.
Yeah, well, normally our entry fee for open gardens is $10 a garden, so that would equate to $140. So, and on top of that, you've got the garden owners there talking about everything, the talks, and it's going to be a really fun weekend. And I've been speaking to Huey, the weather god, and he's looking after us too. We've got a sort of a mid-20s day on the Saturday and just around 30 on the Sunday, so the weather's going to be just perfect.
It will be indeed. And if you want to take up Sophie's suggestion of just, maybe seeing the four gardens that really appeal to you or that are nearby you, $25 for four, which is fantastic, and under 18-year-olds free, which is just amazing. And, Jamie, as a master landscaper, are you seeing an increase in people who are wanting you to ensure that productive gardens are part of the design?
Yeah, that got exacerbated by COVID too. So people who are wanting to be, somewhat self-reliant, whether you've got a big patch or a big block of land to do something on or a small one. So, how often do you have a salad at night time? You can grow lettuces all year round. You could get a small bed or a trough or even one of the wicking beds and just go out and pick leaves every day of the year. Sophie was talking about tomatoes. I mean, the joy of eating a fresh, nutrient-dense tomato or strawberry is it's something really special and something that we'd certainly miss out on at the shops where we look at these fruit and they look like what we're supposed to be eating, but they just don't taste like anything. So it's a real joy to be in control of what you grow and how you grow it.
Absolutely. And, you know, if I can just reiterate, you know, some of these gardens are amazing and serious focused food producers, and other ones are relatable people that are busy and working and they're, you know, they're doing stuff sort of part-time. So you will get so much information and inspiration from visiting these gardens. So please, you know, spend some time on the website. If you say, look, I don't know that I can get to all 14, okay, we'll let you off. But, you know, do spend some time and work out which gardens are the gardens that you think will really tickle you or extend you or you know, I mean, gardening is all about learning and we never stop learning. And, you know, even if something isn't your style, you might pick up a hint in that garden that's a game changer for you.
Yes, and there's just such a huge range of gardens, as you're alluding to, Sophie. There's food forests where people can just literally walk around their garden. Instead of having ornamental trees, they've got fruit bearing or productive, you know, trees that are just incredible. We've got a garden that's got no plants in the ground. They've got 40 wicking beds, and they'll be doing talks on, you know, the fundamentals of wicking beds. He's a friend of yours who, you know,
absolutely,
Sophie
Mark Smith is fantastic,
and he's, you know, doing talks on, you know, understanding. So if you live in a you know, a high rise building, you've got a balcony, you can get a wicking pot or a wicking bed and grow what he's actually growing bananas and mangoes in Mount Torrens. I mean, can you believe that?
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? Well, yeah, absolutely. And then there's, you know, I don't want to, you know, select any, but, you know, the Punchins Garden in Strathalbyn, you know, they are serious food producers and serious cooks. And then you've also got Stephen Hailstone's garden, which is just a dream, and, you know, amazing gardens of people that are professionals, you know, as both garden designers and really growing food. So
yeah,
if you want inspiration, if you're not sure, you know, if you've only just dipped your toe in the water of growing some of your own produce, you will come away totally convinced next weekend on why you need to grow your own produce and the fact that it's doable.
Absolutely. So go online. I think, Sophie, you're right. Have a look at the website because it's got all the detail for all of the different gardens and you can make your choice there. All proceeds go to Food on the Table. I'm not one for celebrating Valentine's Day at all, but I tell you what, loving your garden is a great thing to celebrate on Valentine's weekend. So I reckon this is a perfect thing if there's a gardener in your life to show them that you love them. And I don't mean that you're in a relationship with them. I mean, just take them along to something at the Garden Harvest Festival. You are a very busy man, Jamie McElwain. We'll let you go. But good luck with next weekend. And thank you so much for coming into the studio this morning.
That's absolutely my pleasure and look forward to seeing everyone next weekend. Thanks, Deb.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jamie McElwain, Master Landscaper, organiser of the second Harvest Garden Festival. Look at the Open Gardens SA website to find out more. All proceeds go to Food on the Table. And we would love to hear from you. Sophie has got time to talk to you for the next half an hour or so. So please call in on 1300 222 891. Just coming back to Clint's question, Sophie. Kim sent a text saying, the best thing for mice and rats is vanilla cake mix. Sabrina Hahn from the ABC Perth put me onto it and I've never had an issue. Plus it's safe for your dog and for wildlife.
Okay, so I do actually know this is another random one for rats, but it didn't work for mice. Deb, mashed potato. seriously, because they can't throw up, so they can't. They ingest it and it dries them out. And I did that while we were renting, and because it's not going to leave poisoned creatures around, that would be, you know, a problem for other creatures. But it didn't work on mice, but it certainly worked on rats.
Okay, there you go. Deb mashed potato. Who would have thought it? We are Saturday Talkback Gardening. The number is 1300 222 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson
on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia, and Broken Hill.
Just on the text line, which is 0467 922 891, Melanie says, I'm interested if the science shows any nutritional difference in homegrown and shop-bought veggies.
Oh, absolutely. Can I please tell you to read a book The genre of this book is agriculture, horticulture, nutrition, horror. It is called What Your Food Ate. And there, you cannot read that book and not be convinced that you need control of your food system. So it is an American book, but it is so well referenced. Actually, Stephen Hailstone, who has his garden as one of these 14 gardeners, I do remember him contacting me going, Sophie, this is the most important book you'll ever read. And I went, oh, yeah, yeah. I bought it, as I often buy books, and I don't always get to read them. And when I did, he was absolutely spot on. It is the most important book I've ever read in my life.
There you go, Melanie. There's some reading for you to do. And thank you to Tina and Laura, who sent through a great picture of a chook greens feeder that she made with mesh over the top.
It's actually an IBC that she's cut in half.
Ah.
And she's growing produce in there. It means the chooks cannot get down to scratch everything up. So I love it. Thank you.
That is great. Well, let's head now to Yundamu in the Northern Territory. Michael, good morning to you.
Good morning. No, sorry, I'm not in Yundamu. I'm at Port Hughes currently.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Well,
enjoy Port Hughes. Now,
I've rung before. That's right.
Oh, great. What's your question for Soph?
We've just come to our house in Port Hughes, and we've got a tuckaroo that we planted about 12 months ago, but it's not growing the way we would like it to grow. We've got, it looks like King Neptune's fork. We've got a huge piece coming straight out the centre, and we were just wondering if we cut that, would we damage the rest of the tree from growing?
No. So are you trying to train it up to 1 litre, or you're trying to get rid of the 1 litre?
I'm trying to get rid of the 1 metre. We want to just have a canopy type tree.
Okay. So it will do that of its own accord if you let it go. But if you want to speed it branching, you can certainly take that out. So, they're really hardy trees. They're evergreen. But ultimately, train it to be the shape you want. They have worked so well as street trees right around South Australia, and you can see them growing and thriving.
Yeah, no worries. All right, thank you very much.
Thanks
all the
for
best,
calling.
Michael.
Yeah, lovely to hear from you. Thanks, Michael. Dorothy is in Pinneroo. Now, Dorothy, you've got mini agapanthus, but they're getting a bit sunburnt. Good morning.
Yes, every summer they get burnt. I've got a border of them. Mm-hmm. I'm in my 80s, so I don't want anything that I can prune, and that's why I grew them. Can you suggest that anything that I could put in place of the miniature agapanthus that would grow in harsh climate?
Absolutely. So first off, those mini agapanthus, if you've got somewhere that you can, put them that's semi-shade, that's actually what I think they need, full sun, and they do tend to burn. But there are all sorts of things. There are some Australian native strappy leaf things that are quite beautiful, but even something, it's very common, it's called society garlic, and its name is Tolbagia, and it has grey-green foliage and really pretty lavender flowers that sort of look like a delicate agapanthus head, if you like. And I'm growing them in baking full sun just outside my garden, and they flower forever. They look really pretty. You don't have to prune them, but you could deadhead them when the flowers finish. But the thing I like about it, it's quick growing. It multiplies well. So if you, got a couple of plants, you could split them and spread them around, Dorothy.
Okay, that sounds great. Very good. So thank you very much.
It's called Society Garlic and very pretty.
Yes, I have grown it in the past, but I didn't think of that one. So,
yeah. Good on you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dorothy. Appreciate the call. Just coming back to the book that you recommended to us and our listeners about the nutrition that you get from your own home produce, Janet says, yes, that book is amazing. I bought it for my husband and he just keeps reading it and has implemented the advice in it, and it's a whole new amazing way of growing veggies. I've bought another book to share around our family. Janet, thank you. And just coming back to the issue of a certain mashed potato product, on which I'm getting a whole lot of different things that you can use it for. But just sticking to gardening, Meg says, how do we use it to get rid of rats? As does Tin Man says, how do you place it? Do you put it in the ground in a container?
No. So So I had an issue. I had all my bags of – so when I moved from my previous property, I had a whole lot of brown paper bags that I put seeds in, you know, like I was in a hurry, so they were just brown shopping bags, and I hung them up in the shed to dry, and then I went in the shed – at my rental and found out there were creatures living in those brown paper bags. And so I put a bowl of the mashed potato in the shed where, you know, pets weren't going to get it. It was up high and I would notice that it disappeared, and then I could smell that it had been effective.
Okay, there you go. There's the news. And Christine asks whether the Harvest Festival site indicates if it's wheelchair or walker friendly. Sorry, I didn't have an opportunity to speak to Jamie McElwain.
I'm looking at that right now. Their website usually tells us all that information. Yes, it does. It talks about facilities accessible, suitable for wheelchairs, suitable for prams, you know, no dogs allowed, all that sort of stuff is on their website.
Excellent. And just the name of that book again, please. We're getting texters asking, what is that book called?
Okay, that book is called What Your Food Ate. And I cannot see it on my desk in the meantime to look up the it's Montgomery and Bickley, I think, are the two authors. But What Your Food Ate, you can get it as an audio book. And, you know, it is really, if you're not convinced of the need to grow your own food, A, from a nutrient density point of view, but B, from a the not using chemicals point of view, that book is totally convincing.
Excellent. So get your hands on a copy of that if you can, or ask your local library. Talkback Gardening, 1300 222 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning. Welcome to Saturday Talkback Gardening. Good morning, Sophie. Good morning, Sophie.
Deb, good morning, listeners.
Lovely to have you here this morning to answer phone calls on everything gardening on 1300 222 891. Jump in, 1300 222 891. If you've got a comment to make, you can do that on our text line, 0467 922 891. And later in the program, we have the opportunity to win one of our ABC Gardening magazines as well. So stay tuned for that a little bit later in the program. Sophie, let's go to Victor Harbour. We have got Sue on the line. Welcome, Sue.
Good morning. Good morning to you both. My question is, look, I find myself on my own and I want to reduce the size of my 20-year-old fruit trees. There's only mm-hmm. so much fruit that one person can eat, bottle and give away. And I'm wanting to know, should I be taking off bigger branches in a summer prune or a winter prune? What do you think would be best?
Okay,
I don't want to stimulate growth. But
Yeah. So summer pruning reduces vigour. If you take off bigger branches in winter, that stimulates vigour. So you can take up to 30% off the canopy of your tree, you know, once fruiting's over. And then the other thing to do would be, once you've got the size down, is to thin the fruit. So then go for more fruit, bigger size, right? And, you know, you can do that with all sorts of things. So better quality, bigger fruit rather than so many little fruit. And that's simply a question of, as the fruit gets to sort of marble size or, you know, something like that, you just work over the trees. It doesn't take that long, but you'll get better quality, bigger fruit.
Right, okay. So in summer pruning, I guess I've always thought that I was taking off whippy growth, so I can take off some of the bigger branches this time of year?
Well, you can, what you're trying to do, but, you know, up to 30% of the canopy, not more than that. What you're trying to do is, you know, open the tree up, make sure that it's got, you know, a good shape and everything like that. And bear in mind that the leaves are the solar panels of your fruit tree. So by reducing the number of leaves, you're reducing the energy it produces. Whereas when you do it, the winter prune, people often, you know, in the old days, they did that big winter prune, which basically ensured that the tree was bigger than it was, you know,
Right. Okay.
You know, kept growing because you were stimulating vigor.
Okay, no worries. Thank you
all
very much.
All the best with that, Sue. And, you know, there are, I love the fact that you, you know, are considering this and you're sharing already. There are some organisations like Fruit Share Australia, Fruit Share Adelaide, I should say. Oh, they'll go Australia-wide eventually. But, yeah, who have volunteers all over the place that, you know, if you go, I really can't deal with that this year, they would love the produce and they can share it and, you know, make sure it doesn't go to waste.
I don't like things to go to waste either.
No.
Good on you, Sue.
You're in the right program for that, Sue. Thank you for calling in. 1-300-222-891 is the number. Let's go to Kangaroo Island. Robin, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you going? Sophie, I'm starting establishing a garden in sort of the east side of Kangaroo Island, up the island beach area, and I'm planting straight into sand dune. I've had to do massive amount of exclusion because of the ruse, which is working. What I'm concerned about is how much I should enrich the sand in order to have, you know, healthy growth for the few species that I'm able to plant here.
Yeah, so I would, first off, can I just double check, you are planting local native plants?
Yes.
Yeah, so if they're local.
Well, mostly local, but, I mean, I get them from here. Some of them are, but I guess, I mean, euphorbias, westringias.
So euphorbias are obviously exotic. The thing is, if you're putting in local native plants, they are adapted to your soil, and so soil improvement doesn't necessarily need to happen. But if it's, you know, pure sand, and you can add a bit of clay, so, you know, you can either you've got a bit of clay somewhere on your property or you've got a friend with some clay, and you simply can just make what we call a clay slurry, which is you get a bucket of clay, you dissolve it in a watering can and you water it on, and adding the clay to the sand improves the water holding capacity. You may not necessarily want to put compost in because that's, you know, making it more like you're going to grow veggies or fruit trees, but just some clay added to sand can be a game changer.
Okay. All right. I shall do that. Can you just comment again on the euphorbias, exotics? Are they not natives?
No. Euphorbias are Mediterranean. If they're Wolfenii or something, they're Mediterranean. And do be aware of them because I have got them in my new garden. They can self-seed and they can be quite invasive. So I am watching them. You know, I know there's some people in the Adelaide Hills that think they're a weed. So just be aware of that.
Right, I will. Gosh.
Yeah, so
there were so few plants to choose from when I looked at plants that would grow in this area and then that kangaroos don't like.
That's right, because they're toxic. But the thing is, you've got a fabulous native plant nursery on the island. You know, if you want diversity, you know, you say, look, I want some low things that are prickly for little birds. I want some, you know, plants to bring in bigger birds, all sorts. You'll get great advice from the nursery there.
Yeah, we'll do. That's a good idea. Okay, that's terrific. I'll get on to that clay slurry. Thanks, Sophie.
All the best. Happy gardening, Robin.
Thank you.
Thanks, bye-bye. Robin. Nice to hear from you. Jeff is in Victor Harbour and your mandarin trees aren't flowering, Jeff. Hello.
Hello, ladies. No, it's not. And I don't know whether I'm expecting it at the wrong time of the year, but the tree is very lush and looks healthy, but no flowers or buds.
Okay. Now, can I ask, is this growing in the ground or is it growing in the pot?
In the ground.
Okay. So I wouldn't necessarily think it should have lots of flowers on it right now. So it normally flowers and fruits for you, or is it just a young tree?
No, it's about 5 years old, and it's been a good producer, but this year it just seems to have missed out on a cycle.
Okay. Did you see flowers form on it and then drop off?
Previously.
This year?
No, I didn't.
No. Okay. I would just wait and see what happens. Are you feeding it regularly? Is it healthy and dark green?
It's very healthy, yes. It's very extra lush.
extra
and I'm not giving it much feed food at all.
Okay. Well, look, I wouldn't worry about it and just wait and see what happens. It's, you know, bear in mind that they're cropping in the cooler weather, so from now on you would expect it. But, yeah, I wouldn't be too concerned at all. Just, you know, as long as it's got balanced nutrition and the leaves are healthy and green, I wouldn't be concerned.
Could I give it a light pruning, trimming?
Absolutely. You know, do you think it needs it?
It's almost getting out of control.
Oh, okay. Is it getting a lot of water?
No, it's not. It's not, no. I only water it sparingly. And I looked up online the other day and they said, if that happens, let the soil dry out considerably and then it might force it to flower.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Absolutely. You stress it a little bit and it thinks it's going to die, so it flowers beautifully. Yeah, yeah. Good luck with that, Jeff. Let us know how you go.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you, Jeff. 1300 222 891 to speak straight to Sophie Thompson. Mary from Morphett Vale is doing just that. You've got some ants in your pants there, Mary, or in your plants.
Yes, I have indeed. Sophie, I'm wondering if you could give me some ideas as to how to get rid of an infestation of ants in a raised garden. I've grown vegetables for the last few years in this raised garden. And recently when I've gone to dig the carrots, I just get absolutely covered in ants.
Okay. So that's telling me that the soil is non-wetting. So ants like dry soil. And if the soil had lots and lots of organic matter and compost in it that would hold onto water, they wouldn't be in there. So it's the fact that the soil's become non-wetting. So you can buy, two things. One is to get a organic-based soil wetter and treat the soil, because sometimes what happens is we say, but I'm watering all the time and the water runs over the top and down the sides and doesn't soak through the soil. So we need an organic-based soil wetter that's going to let the water penetrate right through and then water it really, really well. And then the ants won't like being somewhere that is moist. So they will tend to move on. So whether it's just that, you know, we've had quite a severe season. So whether the soil's just become non-wetting and so you've just got to get, you might need, just watering it probably won't fix it. You need to get an organic soil wetter.
Oh, it's interesting because, we've got lots of compost ourselves, and the garden always seems to be quite moist whenever I've dug it. So,
does it? But the ants are everywhere.
Yes.
So generally, what they want, crazy. They want to go somewhere that it's dry. You know, like there's a dry pocket in the soil. So I'm not quite sure if the soil is moist why they're there. So whether you need to do, you know, whether you actually, once those carrots come out, you need to investigate further, dig down further and see, the water, and is it a metal raised bed?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so one of the other things is sometimes the soil pulls away from the side, right?
Uh-huh,
and so when you're watering, the water runs down the side, but it doesn't actually soak through. So I would be investigating more because ultimately ants love dry soil. And if it's kept moist, they're not usually as keen on living there. So do some more investigating, Mary, I think.
I will. And one other question about ants. You've mentioned double-sided tape around fruit trees. So we also do have some problem with ants crawling up our fruit trees.
Yep.
What's the name of the double-sided tape and where can we get it?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's called fruit tree grease band, okay? So I have, for example, some citrus in pots who have been neglected because, you know, citrus in pots is hard work because you've got to make sure they don't dry out. And so they got scale on them. So there were ants crawling up and down. So I put the fruit tree grease band on and you have to make sure that there's no little tracks the ants can crawl underneath. And it works for a while. And then what happens is the sticky stuff stops being so sticky and it stops catching the ants. And then I have a tube of it's called horticultural glue. It's a bit like Vaseline, but it's a proper product. And then I've simply put a band of that on top of that fruit tree grease band, and the ants have gone, the scale's gone, and, you know, the trees are looking happier.
Okay, where do I get this?
Nurseries or garden centres. Fruit tree grease band. It's a, I think it's a multi-guard product. And, you know, you'll find it, it's this plastic that you open out and it's really sticky. So, you know, don't get it on your hands and then go and touch the doorknob.
Sure.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All the best with that, Mary.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mary, for calling in. The phone number is 1300 222 891, and the text line is 0467 922 891, and they're the numbers you'll need. If you'd like to win an ABC Gardening magazine, we'll give one away to a phone caller, but if you're listening on digital, then we'll give one away on the text line. So get your full name and postal address if you're sending it through on the text line right now. Also, lots of people asking for things that you've already mentioned advice. Yep. Just to let you know that you can listen back to this podcast during the week, but if you would like to listen earlier than that, everything that is recorded on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, or everything that is on our programs, is in fact available online at abc.net.au/Adelaide. Just look for the program and you can listen back to any of those programs as well for up to 1 week. So just keep that in mind. Deb Tribe with you this morning with Sophie Thompson in Talkback Gardening. The numbers again, phone 1300 222 891 and text 0467 922 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson
on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Now, Sophie, we are getting so many requests for the name of the book that you mentioned earlier. I'm going to put it to you again. Can you please put out of misery the many, many texters that would like to go and find that book, buy it, or borrow it from their library?
Absolutely. And it's called What Your Food Ate. And it is, you know, like, this is a big call. Stephen Halstein called this and he's got his garden open this weekend. He said that it was the most important book I would ever read in my life. And he didn't exaggerate. It is the most important book. And as I said before, genre, agriculture, horticulture, nutrition, horror. And basically, it just makes you aware that we need to know what's going into our food. And we're, you know, I'm not saying we can grow everything ourselves, but we need to make decisions on what we buy. And if we can, grow part, at least part of our fruits, veggies, and herbs. It's the only, you know, it's the only chance at optimal nutrition. And also, you know, this book talks a lot about the chemicals used in food production. And yeah, it's scary.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You've been warned. Go and read that book.
Yeah.
Congratulations to Rosemary from Harndorf, who has won one of the magazines. I'll tell you who the SMS winner is shortly. But let's go to Marilyn from Strathalbyn. Marilyn, you've got a nectarine question.
Noreen.
Noreen. Sorry.
Yeah. I was trying to work out what we're... How can we help you, Marilyn?
Yes, please, Sophie. I was just wondering, I have some noreen bulbs, which I've just recently dug up, and I can't remember how deep I grew them. Do I plant them with their tops out of the soil, or do I put them right down under the soil, please?
Not so deep, but usually their neck is about level with the top of the soil, if that makes sense. But the most important thing about noreens is, and I hope you are aware of this, that once you dig them up, they sulk, okay?
Oh, do they?
And they may not flower for a couple of years. So, you know, hold your guard, because what happens is people go, oh, they were flowering before I dug them up, they stopped flowering, so I'll move them again. Every time you move them, they sulk for a couple of years. So you have to plant them and hold your guard, put them in a sunny position. You know, they are South African bulbs. They are tough as old boots. They take absolute baking. So just if you don't get flowers the first year, don't panic. Just leave them and they'll flower when they're ready.
Oh, thank you. That's really good, Sophie. Actually, I was wondering, you know, when you said that they've just got to be buried to the top of the ground, what the actual stalk of the bulb?
So the bulb's in the ground, but the foliage where it would come out is just at ground level, if that makes sense.
Yes,
so
it
for
does.
People that don't know, noreens are a long bulb,
yes.
You know, and they can be, I'm looking at my fingers here, let's say 4 to 5 inches long. And,
yes.
You know, so that the foliage would be above the ground and the neck is in the ground. But they, you know, which colour noreen is it? Do you know?
It's the orange pink. You know, I'm not sure if it's orange.
Is it the one that
pink.
Has those metallic sparkles in it?
No, it's a plain one.
Okay, noreens are these amazing South African bulbs. They are the best cut flower. And because they're South African, their natural climate is like our climate. And they take baking and they can be in parts of your garden where you just bung them in. You don't water them and they do their thing every autumn. Well, summer, spring flowering too, but they're mainly autumn flowering. They're an absolute treat. So enjoy them, Marilyn.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Sophie. That was great information. Thank you. Am I able to ask you another question?
Absolutely.
I got some daffodil and bluebell bulbs, and each year they work their way out of the ground, out of the soil to the very, you know, just lay on the top of the soil. I do plant them deep, but I wonder why they work themselves out of the ground, please.
That's a bit unusual. If anything, they're renowned for going deeper. If something like a bluebell, which is a, you know, sort of a cool climate shade lover, if you plant it too high, they'll actually become these funny skinny worm things and go down deeper till they get to the right height. So I've not heard of them working their way out of the ground. I've heard of them working their way into the ground. But those ones generally, whatever the height of the bulb is, so let's say a daffodil bulb is, you know, 2 inches, 5 centimetres, generally put 1 to 2 times that depth of soil above them. So generally you do them deeper, whereas things like noreens, which don't mind baking, they're up closer to the surface.
Oh, right. Well, thank you for your help. I'm really thankful.
Two for the price
of
one,
Marilyn.
Plant them this afternoon.
And you're in beautiful Strathalbyn where there's a fabulous garden club.
Yes, we're very lucky. Yes,
you are. I love it.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Marilyn, and congratulations to Bev from Aberfoyle Park, who is our ABC Gardening Magazine winner as well on the text line. Final call this morning is Alex in Davering Court. Now, you want to talk about fruit trees. Good morning, Alex.
I read and heard a lot about the summer pruning. Fruit trees is healthier than in winter pruning. Now, my question is, harvested my apricots. Shall I prune it now or it's too hot and would be too much stress for the tree?
No. Great question, Alex. So with apricots, you're always better to prune in clear, dry weather, not in winter, because in winter they're more likely to get fungal spores and gummosis and things like that. So it would be better to prune it now. Now, when it's going to be a 35-degree day, I'd probably say not necessarily today. Let's wait till the temperature's, you know, in the mid to high 20s or something like that and prune it. And then you can take up to a third off. We call it summer pruning, but it's generally after you've got your crop off. And, you know, you can do it on a cooler weather and the trees will recover and they won't get sunburned.
Wonderful. That was my question, and I thought the same thing, but I wanted to check with someone who knows more than me.
Absolutely, Alex. Good on you.
Good on you, Alex. Always get a second opinion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's what Sophie is here for. Thank you so much for your many calls this morning. On the text line, Soph, Jackie at West Croydon says, I've planted noreens in a hot, sunny spot over 10 years. I've not moved them. They're very healthy, lush looking, but they've never flowered. And this texter says, shout out to all the lovely, friendly people at Food Bank who are always happy to take our excess fruit. So if you've got too much fruit, there's always someone that will enjoy it. And on the book, What Your Food Ate, Boy, lots of people getting to it. Genevieve's ordered her copy. Viv at Hillcrest says the Dig to Grow website, if you search under what your food ate under video, there is a whole bunch of videos related to it. Joan at Hallett Cove has checked in with her library. It has an 11-week wait for it, but hey, when you get it, you'll be able to read it. And thank you to Kay in Auburn who sent through a beautiful picture saying, though I was in Queensland for the last 3 weeks, Wicking Beds produced delicious, tasty tomatoes with thanks to generous friends for watering. So thank you very much. Isn't that lovely? So, Sophie, another busy week, and I know that you'll have a busy week ahead. So.
Absolutely. Okay. I've actually got a garden tour here now.
Oh, great.
So yeah, looking forward to it.
Enjoy. It's an amazing property to have a look at. Sophie, love your work. Catch you next Saturday.
Happy gardening to all our listeners.